This is episode 35 of the Mentoring Developers podcast. Welcome. Check us out on the web at mentoringdevelopers.com/episode35. On that page, you'll find show notes, highlights from this episode, and a lot more, including ways to subscribe to iTunes and Stitcher Radio. This is going to be awesome.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hi, everyone. Today, I'll be talking to Angelo Mandato. Now, Angelo is a little bit different from some of my past guests. He is a developer and a very nice guy, but he founded a startup, a company that is doing something really ambitious. They are one of the few major podcast hosting solution providers. Now, he has created many themes and plugins for WordPress because he's a WordPress developer, he's a PHP developer, but he has a lot of experience in a lot of different technologies and web-based platforms. And he started in a very unusual fashion, and he moved on and he started a company. Now, that's special because that takes guts. If you can start a company, if you can go through the struggles and the difficulty that every entrepreneur faces, then there is something about you. You have something in you that I think that we can all learn from. So I can't wait for you to meet Angelo Mandato. Here we go. Before we start the show, I have a favor to ask you. You know, this show is all about new and aspiring software developers and their mentors. And I want to interview and I want to bring out stories from all of you. Whether you are a junior developer, you want to be a developer, maybe you work with developers, hire developers, maybe you mentor them. All of these stories put together build for us a complete picture, and then we can learn from our experiences and find out how we can be more successful, more inclusive, how we can have diversity, how we can encourage people to get better and encourage people to come to this field. If you want me to interview you, or if you want to be on a discussion panel, go ahead and type mentoringdevelopers.com/join in your web browser. This will open a Google form where you can tell me what topics interest you and what dates and times you're available for about an hour or so. Everyone is welcome, and I would be thrilled to get a chance to talk to you. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you at mentoringdevelopers.com/join. Today we have a special guest, Angelo Mandato, or maybe Angelo Mandato. How are you?
Great.
So how do you pronounce your last name?
Well, I kind of like to pronounce it both ways. Technically, if you're like, you know, in Italy or around people in Spanish or French or Portuguese even, it's pronounced Mandato. But I've kind of grown up with the idea that it doesn't matter. It's kind of like potato or potato. So Mandato's perfect. So
based on who you're talking to, you might change the way you pronounce your last name.
Right. But I know who I am, so it doesn't bother me. So
yeah, we'll just stick with Angelo.
Yeah.
All right. So what do you do? I know a little bit about you. I've known you for a little while, and I know that you are doing some really cool stuff. So tell us a little bit about you. How do you see yourself?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. Today, I see myself as pretty much an expert in the podcasting development space. And it's kind of been a long road to get there. And it kind of fell into that through just being exposed to a lot of different web-type technology through the 2000s.
All right. So I know that you are a developer. I know that you're involved in developing podcast hosting because you work at, and are you a founder of Raw Voice, or are you one of the early employees?
Yeah, actually, I'm one of the co-founders. There were five of us that created the company virtually. So everybody was kind of spread out the country. We just used tools at the time to create the company with Skype, GoToMeeting, I mean, phone calls, chat, you name it.
All right. So you have this company. What does this company do again?
We provide podcasting services.
All right. Well, I'm a customer, so I wanted everybody to know it's a good service, but go ahead.
We're going to cut this out. Well, let me dig in a little bit. So when we originally started, we were focused solely on the monetizing and podcasting with advertising. So we started our first network, which was Podcaster News. And the idea was podcasters could create up to 5-minute audio recordings of whatever news topics they preferred, and they'd give their news show their own name, and they could do that on our site. And then we would do a 70-30. They would get 70% of the revenue. We would get 30%. Within a few short months, it quickly discovered that there was, you know, a bigger market than just news to do this with. So we launched Blueberry in summer of 2006 to be an all-encompassing network for podcasts, not just limited to news. And that's kind of where we kind of – that became mainly our mainstay, and our original business model fell at the wayside, just specifically focusing on news for podcasting. And now you're here today strictly doing services mainly.
Yeah. So, okay. So you have been coding for a while, right? How long have you been coding?
As a career since 2000.
Okay. That's 15, 16 plus years. And do you remember how you encountered programming for the first time?
Oh yeah. So I had a roommate, which in my college years, I was originally studying mechanical engineering. And I had a roommate that was taking computer engineering, and he was doing some coding. This was, I think, 1996. He was doing some coding to solve some problems with Perl. And he also was real big on setting up servers. And I don't want to call it hacking, but basically making computers do things that they weren't intended to. And that was kind of the cool thing back in the 90s to, you know, actually network and get on the internet when you weren't supposed to be able to make browsers load up and things like that. So I was just really, I was exposed to a lot of this stuff from him, and it just got me kind of excited and actually helped me change my career to where I went into computer science.
So you didn't feel the need to study computer science to actually get formal training? You just said, well, I'm just going to learn it and do it.
Well, no, actually, I switched my major to computer science at that only a year later after that.
Okay, so then you got a bachelor's degree in computer science?
Yep.
Do you think that was really helpful and it gave you confidence and maybe a lot of skills that you probably wouldn't have otherwise?
Well, initially, when I graduated, I still felt I didn't know anything. And there was a good year there where I just needed experience. I think everybody that comes into the industry right out at the education kind of has that same feeling that they're just kind of thrown into the industry and the school didn't prepare them well. But after about a year into my career, that completely switched. I kind of found that the school gave me a lot of problem-solving education rather than just knowing specific platforms or software or languages. And that was actually more valuable long-term than short-term.
Okay, problem solving. Is it because you went to study computer science or is it just college? Because I know that if you were a mechanical engineer, you solve a lot more problems than a computer science graduate. But it's a different set of problems, a lot of math problems, a lot of different other types of things that you need to do. You think that it matters that you study computer science specifically?
At the time when I first graduated, I thought it was just a degree and it was helping me get in the foot in the door. But actually, I would almost disagree with you on the problem solving. Like everything that you do every day, it's a matter of solving a problem and doing it very efficiently. So for example, in 2006, when we were launching statistics services, where we were analyzing data, we just built a system and it did simple imports and putting and inserting the records into the database. And we quickly found as we started to scale that it was not scalable. And I quickly had to refer to stuff that I learned in college on how to optimize the data for putting it in a database. And, you know, without that education background, I'd have to research and figure that out on my own. I still had to do research to figure out how to do it with the language at hand, programming language at hand. But I knew from taking algorithms and data structures type courses how to attack the problem.
I think that's a really good point. Specific languages and technologies and frameworks, they keep changing. And your knowledge is definitely going to be stale after a while of, let's say, a version of a language. But the concepts, they don't change. And what's behind the technologies, that doesn't change. So it gives you a good bearing and you know where to look. I think that's a very fair point. But so you got into college, you were studying computer science. When you were studying during your college years, did you work somewhere? Did somebody pay you to do programming?
No, I did not have the luxury or opportunity, I should say, to do like internships, which I did. But I was still working somewhat in industry. So when I was at school, I also worked in the residential network, and this was in the late 90s. At the time, students were just then being able to afford a desktop computer to take to school. So it was a real popular thing for the colleges to provide services to those students bringing computers to get a network card in the computer and then get them connected to the school network in the dorms. So I kind of was at the right place at the right time and did a lot of networking work and hardware work. And actually, that last summer before I graduated, I went and got A-plus certified and worked one summer at hopefully some people might remember this, CompUSA as a computer repair tech.
Yeah, CompUSA, good old CompUSA. I used to go there. I used to like it a lot. And then obviously it disappeared.
Yeah.
But okay, so now you're graduated and you have a little bit of money because you worked on the side, but you still haven't worked as a software engineer professionally. How long did it take for you after you graduated? I'm assuming you didn't go to graduate school. Is that true?
Right. No, as far as finding a job, I had one lined up before I graduated. And it's one thing, this is a side note, I kind of regret not taking maybe a week or two and just relaxing. I just remember graduating and I needed to work right away because I was broke. Even though I was working, I was also paying all my, you know, loans and stuff. So I was ready to just have a job so I'd actually have some cash in my, you know, my wallet and stuff. And so I was ready. I wanted to start. But I would say it took a year before I started feeling that, hey, I'm actually a programmer. I can solve problems on my own. And it wasn't long, though, when I first started my first job where I was contributing. For example, when I first started out, one of my projects that I was working on was to make an internal document center, which it's hard to imagine now, but around 2000, we had what you see now, a lot of the features you see now in Zoho, for example, or Google Docs. We were developing that in-house for a company here in Columbus that just sold ductwork and other types of manufacturing products. And when we first started the problem, we were to use C++ and CGI mode. And that was very common up to about 2000 to write your applications either in Java or in C++ in CGI type scripts. And I just happened to be, you know, reading at the time other trends and other things that were going on and stumbled upon PHP. And, you know, what I wrote basically in 4 months in C++, I was able to rewrite in PHP in about a day. So when I demoed that to my supervisor, he was so impressed. He's like, all right, let's just move forward. We're going to switch to that. And the rest was history.
Yeah,
so
the rest is history. And now you're a PHP guru, right? You have been in PHP for how long now?
Well, since December of 2000 when I really started digging into it. Before then, though, I remember getting a book on it that fall. But there's always a lead or a It's always like a build-up time. I remember getting the book and reading the first chapter, and then it sat there for a month. But once I really dug into it, then all of a sudden it was like, this is really going to work. This is really going to save time. And all these things kept running through your head that then all of a sudden it just kind of snowballed. We had all the CGI apps converted over that I wrote within a month. And that was not spending a month on it, but that was while I was working on their projects at the same time. So
that's incredible. And PHP is not the most popular language in the world in some ways, and in other ways it is the most popular language. It is an incredible language because it allows you to build web pages, websites so quickly, right? It's very efficient, but it has some quirks that some people don't like.
Right. Yeah. Some of the quirks are actually probably the features that make it ideal for the exact solution that it's for, which is for the web. Right. Thinking, for example, in like Perl or with C++, you have to add a library in order to parse and deal with the GET and POST and cookies and all these web-based pieces of data that you then need to process and convert to what you're trying to do in your application. PHP just natively makes all these variables already available and already handles the conversion of decoding the URL into what you need it to be, you know, its actual value.
That's pretty cool. I'm wondering about keeping up with PHP development and web development in general. I know that all the things that I've learned in my career, I've had to really work hard to keep abreast of whatever technologies, techniques, and, you know, the new stuff that's coming out that's now the new hotness, but also maybe it's a different way of doing things. TDD came out, Agile came out, all different ways of doing stuff came out, and then we adapted. It's a constant process of learning. I don't know much about PHP. So from your point of view, is it something that evolves a lot, that language changes a lot, that you keep, you know, you have to keep up with it? Because, I mean, PHP has its own frameworks as well. Is it a bit of a struggle, or is it easier than other programming languages?
Yeah, I find that it's easier in that the core basics of it haven't changed very much since about 2000, or since version 4. The functions have come and gone. Used to be you would be able to split and join arrays to strings. Now you have to implode and explode them. But it's more of a function call name change than anything else. Now, libraries, on the other hand, have come and gone, frameworks. And that's one where it's really, you got to keep up on it. WordPress, for example, if you're a plugin developer, you really think of WordPress as just a framework. Obviously, if you're a theme developer, you think of it a little differently. But in that regard, it's a constant struggle to keep up with the function names and the libraries and hooks and actions. Other than that, it's not that hard to keep up with as far as the basics. The code itself has not changed in how it's structured. Other than some changes with how classes are implemented, which is a really good thing. C++ is getting closer and closer to the way classes and objects work in other languages like Java or C++. So that's obviously a really good thing.
So PHP is not object-oriented. Is it object-oriented?
It can be either or. It's very similar to C++, where you can still write in C style, if you want to just write some functions, or you can create classes and create objects from those classes.
Interesting. Well, it's definitely a very interesting language just because it has a lot of adoption. And just because of that, we can't ignore it. Even some people, you know, I won't name people, but there are some people who don't like the syntax and don't like the mixing of presentation logic with business logic and database and all that. But it works and it gets you to a finished state pretty quickly. That's why it's popular. And any language that lets you build a framework like WordPress, I can't argue with that. This is too big of a testament.
Well, you know, that reminds me of some of the things I've been exposed to over the years. I was originally writing code, Windows applications at the same job back in 2000 with a C++ platform called Power Plus Plus. And hopefully no one knows what I'm talking about. But Power Plus Plus was kind of ahead of its time in the fact that you first developed your application as just the GUI part of it, how you want it to be formed. And then you're able to right-click on these on the graphical view of your application as you're building the skeleton and say, see all the events that can happen with a button, for as an example. And then you'd say, you'd right-click and you'd say, all right, I want to go to the code where I click on the on-click action for this button. Then bam, it'd go right to your syntax editor built into the IDE, and you'd start coding what's going to happen when someone clicks that button. And a good example might be that you would just close the window. But it was very powerful at the time, and it kind of, I think, inspired a lot of other languages to adopt that same kind of model. Like Visual C then started to offer more GUI widgets for building Windows apps, for example, in a very similar fashion.
Let me ask you about the trajectory of your career. I think one of the questions people have when they're starting out is, should they really pick the best job as their first job, just to make sure that they're in an environment where they can stay for a whole number of years. Let's say they can stay for 10 years and grow within the company and learn from the seniors and become prominent within the company. Another approach would be to say, I'm going to take whatever first job I can get, and I'm going to learn whatever I can learn. And once that stops, once I'm not learning anymore, or maybe I'm not making as much money as I like, then maybe I'll look elsewhere and go to another company and so on. So those are two different approaches. What's the approach that you used, and how did it work for you?
Well, I would say I my first job, I always kept my opportunities open, because you never know what might come next year or what might change. So if you told me back in 2000 that in less than 10 years there would be this whole industry where we were making apps for these little phones that go in your pocket, I would have said, I would have been like, what are you kidding?
Yes. Apps? What? Apps right. For phones? Okay.
Yeah, and our phones are going to have more apps than what we have now. I'm like, wow, that's going to be exciting. And it also, if you told me the flip phone would be dead, I would also have been surprised, although I hated them.
Yeah, I mean, the industry, the mobile industry has I mean, completely gone crazy in the last even 5-6 years.
Right. So, you know, I would, with that point, I would say don't limit yourself and make a plan and then stick to it. Something might change, and then you might change with that, which is always a good thing. But I would not limit yourself to thinking you have to work for a specific type of company. For example, when I did get my first job, I had the opportunity to work for another company that was doing something that really sounded really cutting edge, as opposed to the job I did take. And it was a really hard decision, but I'm glad I did what I did, because what I thought was cutting edge at the time ended up being really short term. I found out a year later they laid everybody off. And the company I did go with, because they were a manufacturing firm, their main goals were always to develop things to save the company money. It's kind of like, I mean, that's obviously what the long-term goal is for any company. That's why you develop something, and is to save money or to make capabilities in the company that wouldn't have existed otherwise. So with that switch, I was given an opportunity to actually have a lot more say and input to help save the company money, for example, and come up with solutions where I wouldn't have had that kind of influence at the company that was cutting edge at the time. And it also gave me the opportunity, as that company grew in with their development, to grow with it. So I got exposed to, like I said, web development. I got exposed to Windows app development with first it was Power Plus Plus, then it was Microsoft Visual Studio. I got exposed to running email servers, POP and Qmail, SMTP servers, and also was setting up web servers, which is really where I got my first exposure to Apache and MySQL and PHP and all that as well. So, you know, it's really, I would almost look at when you're interviewed a company, don't think of it in terms of this is a company that's Google, for example. Think of it as this is a company that doesn't have a known name, but what potential do I have when I'm there to actually have influence on what's going on?
I think
that's
a good point because, sorry to cut you short, but I think that the real key here is that you worked at a company that didn't have 100 developers. They were a small company. They were a small IT shop, which means one person had to wear different hats and do different things, which gave you the opportunity to learn all these different things. So working for small startups or small, even established companies with a small IT department will give you the opportunity to work in different areas. So that's definitely true if that's something that people wanted to do.
Right. In one other thing, I've had some friends and colleagues that have done jobs at startups. If you're really passionate about what the startup is about, I would definitely get involved in it. If you're not passionate about whatever the startup is doing, I would actually recommend not getting a job at a startup. I've kind of seen a lot of other friends get jobs at startups, and they're then, because they're not really key to the decisions that are going on, they're just there basically to fill whatever need that startup has, and then they're not really involved. So kind of just a warning, I guess, on how the startup culture works. But on the flip side, you know, there's a lot of rewards if you are involved with the startup and how the company's evolving, because then you could grow with that startup when it eventually becomes a established company.
Yeah, I've seen it happen over and over. When you join a company that in its early stage, maybe it's been around for 10 years, but it's a small company, is still trying to find its feet, and you stick with that company even when you are a junior developer or somebody in a junior role, eventually after a number of years, you will learn the business. And when the company does get funding or gets big, maybe it grows 10 times, it may actually hire 10 times more people, but all the new people coming in are now going to be in a position maybe a little below you because you have the domain knowledge, you have more experience in the company, and what naturally tends to happen is that the management will promote you and the new people coming in will be, perhaps you will be leading them. So there's an opportunity to grow within the company. I have a couple of questions here, Angelo. How do you know when to switch jobs? My opinion on this is when you've stopped growing, either if you want to grow your career into management, let's say that's what you want to do, and that's where you see yourself growing, if the company is not providing you the opportunities. Or it could be that you want to learn certain sets of technologies and you've stopped learning for whatever reason. You've hit a plateau and you feel like you need to get another boost. So maybe that's another way, another reason to switch companies. Do you have an opinion on when it's time for somebody to start looking elsewhere?
Well, that's got two answers to it. So as just a developer myself, it really comes down to when an opportunity exposes itself. So, you know, when I quit my last job and started doing this full time, it was simply because it was an opportunity to really start, be part of my own business. So that was a huge opportunity, which if I was bouncing around from job to job, I probably would have not been able to do that. Now, as someone who hires somebody, I think maybe the magic number is like 2 years. I'm kind of leery of even considering someone to interview if I see on their resume that they change jobs every 6 months to a year. So just from that perspective, I would at least try to always work someplace for at least a couple of years. That way it doesn't look like you're just, you know, bouncing around just for pay.
Right. So I just wonder, what's your motivation for that? Is it because you feel like in 6 months, you couldn't possibly have done anything valuable? Or is it because you think that that person is not loyal enough? What's your feeling on that?
Well, there's a good 6-month curve for someone to get up to speed with what you do development wise and code and get with the cult men with the culture. So, you know, you're investing in an employee. So if you invest all that time, they learn everything you do, but they're not yet productive. When they then are starting to be productive and then they leave, or the fear is that they leave early, then you just kind of wasted a lot of time.
Right, because certainly the company is investing time, resources, and also lining up future projects. So it does disrupt the company a little bit. So I think I see completely your point of view. But I want to finish this train of thought with talking about your switch to becoming a founder. Now, that's a huge leap. A lot of people do that. I've seen a lot of young people do that. Some people with maybe, you know, a couple of years experience, they just go and they found their companies. But you did that. You took some chance. Did you do that because you like the independence? Did you do that because you like the people that you were founding the company with? What was your real motivation? Because certainly you were taking a financial risk.
Yeah, and actually for the first few years, I was substantial pay cut as well. But which I should have to thank my wife for dealing with that period, that she was willing to, you know, take that risk and pretty much be the breadwinner. But so thanks, Heather.
Yeah, thanks, because, you know, the work that Angela, you and your team are doing is great. So what's your motivation? Why would you put yourself through this?
Well, you know, at first it was a hobby for about 2 years. And it's when you're passionate about something and you put so much work and effort into it, you kind of want to see it become a bigger creation. So probably my biggest motivator is just taking everything that I do and making it better and watching it, you know, grow into basically an industry. So I totally get why a lot of entrepreneurs, when they have something they're really passionate about and understand what they do really well, stick with it, because they become an expert in their field. And in the same token, by being passionate about all the different aspects of their industry, they're able to keep improving and moving their industry forward.
I think it's still worth doing if you end up making less money year after year than a job. Like if let's say you're making, I'm going to throw a number out there, you're making $100,000 a year as a salary, and you work in your own startup and you end up making $80,000 a year over, if you average it out over 5 years, you at the end of it, would you still consider it worthwhile?
You know, I would say there's always the times where it's like, man, if I was doing this, the garage would be full of really cool cars. But on the flip side, there's this satisfaction of, you know, there's a little bit of the, you know, your control and you're able to, you know, plan out your destiny. But there's really a lot of satisfaction in having everything completed and actually seeing it being used and utilized by other people. And a lot of the attitude, too, isn't just that you might be being paid less than what you might be if you just went on into the private sector. But also, you're also thinking long term, like, because you own part of the company, at some point, it's going to be worth more. So it's kind of thinking in terms of an investment as well, not thinking of the short term, but the long term.
Absolutely. So that's really good to know what motivates entrepreneurs. And a lot of us have this entrepreneurial spirit. I don't want to call it a gene, because I think you can catch it. It's more like a bug. And entrepreneurship is exciting, but it comes with its risks, especially if you are a good software developer in a technology that's in demand. You can make a very good living just by being an employee, and you may not ever want to do this. But if you want to experience the thrill of doing your own thing, and it's like raising a baby, right? It's exciting. Raising a baby always takes sacrifice, right? It's more work. You probably put in more hours in your own company than you would as an employee, right?
Oh, yeah.
So now that we've talked about this, I want to talk about your experience when you were a developer, just an employee, when you had your first job. Did you ever feel like you had to prove yourself, you had to do something crazy to show everybody that you are good, you're qualified? Was it just smooth sailing? Did you have a culture shock? How was your experience?
I think there was a little bit of a culture shock. There was a definitely a curve where I thought I was not going to be up to speed with everybody else. Like it's just going to take me a lot longer to figure out and problem solve compared to some of the senior developers. And there was a curve there. The industry is set up so obviously entry level programmers are labeled as entry level. But the curve is only, you know, within 6 months, usually an employer wants to start seeing you actually producing and making a difference in the company. And I think that first 6 months was always a fear for me because I didn't know anything of what the company did. But I was very lucky in the fact that my supervisor was probably one of my greatest supervisors ever in my whole life, and was very encouraging of, you know, grab a book, read something. If it helps solve problems and stuff, then that's awesome. And that's the kind of supervisor that I think everybody should have. Someone and nurtures and encourages you to, you know, find answers on your own and also bounce ideas off the rest of the team.
I think that's really important because new people coming in, they have anxieties. They have all kinds of psychological issues. It's their first time. It's like somebody riding a bicycle for the first time. If you don't have any support, it's very likely that they will fall and they will get disheartened. We expect everybody to be, you know, this perfect, you know, this, they have this perfect confident selves that they go out there and they just throw them in the deep and they will swim. And if they don't swim, if they show any kind of weakness, then you throw them out, you get somebody else in. But I think that we're not doing justice to a lot of the newcomers. They have a lot of talent and they just may need a little bit of handholding in the beginning. I think it's a word, it's sort of a dirty word in our industry where handholding is considered bad. I think handholding, personally, I think it's a good thing. You're not going to have to do that all the time, but just, you know, just to get somebody on board, get them comfortable. And if there's something that's making them uncomfortable in the company, perhaps the way you run things, perhaps the way the meetings go, I don't know, it could be based on various factors, then I think the first line of action would be to try to address that instead of saying, well, you know, you don't fit our culture. Because I often say that cultures are things that they should evolve as new people come in. And we shouldn't try to have people that just fit our starting culture, our monoculture. However, we started forever and ever that everybody who comes in has to be just like us. Because when we do that, we have, you know, we don't have the plurality of ideas and perceptions, and our end result is a product, whatever you're working on, is not that good. And we've talked about it on this podcast several times with women, when sometimes you don't have women on the team and the software is really offensive to women in some ways because you didn't consider that. And so I think it's, personally, I think it's a good idea to go out of your way to help people, encourage people, and, you know, just expect that people are good, right? So that's my rant for the day. So do you think it's important for developers to promote themselves? Do you think they should talk about their achievements, perhaps, you know, in blog posts? Perhaps they should go out there and talk to conferences, talk at conferences or user group meetings, just so that, you know, they let people know, hey, this is me. This is what I know from that point of view.
Well, I think if they're comfortable in a specific topic, they should be promoting themselves. Whether or not they do it at conferences or meetups or just within their own organization or their job, that's for them really to decide. But for example, a good example, though, would be if you're an expert in a particular subject in your company, you definitely need to make it known in some way. That way, when a problem comes up that's in that particular area that you're an expert at, you can be the one to step up and lead that problem solving.
Now, that's a good point. But how do you do that? How do you do that within the company?
Well, you know, I wonder, each company has their own culture. You know, if you're obviously when you're first hired, you would put stuff on your resume, but things change over time. So if your company has like a weekly meeting or a weekly like a powwow session or you know, progress reports, I don't know. It's just each company does something a little different, but hopefully they're meeting once a week on a informal way to discuss what you're working on and what you do. That's the right time to bring up, like, hey, last week I worked on my own personal Android app, and now I know how to build Android apps. You know, that's the kind of stuff you want to throw in those conversations, because other, especially your supervisor and everybody else in the room, is going to say, hey, he knows how to compile an app on there. So when we, if we ever get to that kind of problem, we know who to talk to.
Have you ever been mentored by somebody? Is that something that you believe in, that you need a mentor, or you need somebody who can just pair with you, just spend time with you? Is that something that, that you went through? What do you think about this?
Well, that's a good question. In college, obviously I had other students that were always kind of indirectly mentoring. I had a friend, Mark, who was actually doing coding. Originally, it was some ASP code in the 90s. So that's another programming language. It kind of sets everything up kind of like PHP with all your variables and stuff. It was just exciting to go in a room and talk to him and figure out what he was doing. And it pertained with work. For example, at the residential dorms, students needed to go to a web page in order to activate their MAC address so we could then get them on the network. And those were the kind of web pages he was working on. So that kind of mentorship, as far as finding people that are in your field that are doing what you kind of want to do, you know, talk to them, learn what they're doing, and you know, get excited from that. And actually, I think the biggest thing from a mentor isn't necessarily learning everything they do, although that's good. It's also just getting inspired and excited to be, you know, influenced by them. So you could have a mentor possibly that you've never, you know, met, but because they've accomplished certain things, you strive to then be like that, which is a really great thing.
Yeah, it's a role model. Everybody needs role models.
Right.
And
right.
If you have a good role model, I want to be like that person, then you know exactly what to do, because that person probably, their history is known, how they went about their career, it's known, so then you can follow that. So it's good to target that. I think that's a very good idea. And have you ever mentored anybody yourself?
I want to say I haven't, but I'm sure I have, actually. I've been involved in a lot of open source projects over the years. So, you know, hopefully indirectly, maybe somebody forked some code that I wrote or followed something that I created and then went on to work on something similar. I know I've gotten those emails in the past where they say, hey, thank you for doing this. It really got me started in what I now do. So possibly that would fall into that mentoring. But I've never actually had someone like for 3 months follow me around like a blacksmith kind of mentor. But yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty rare. What I've seen more often is you have sort of an informal mentor that person sort of agrees to answer questions once in a while. You get together with your friends and you're working on a problem, then you get stuck somewhere and then you're like, well, I know this person who is good at it or is more senior or is an expert. And then you shoot them an email, hey, I have this question. And then that person answers you, maybe gets on a call with you. That's about I think, the ideal type of mentorship you can get.
Right. You know, I don't know. I forget what the exact word is for it. But when growing up, I had a lot of folks I looked up to, obviously, that were not like directly in my life, but Henry Ford and Edison and Tesla, all these guys from that turn of the century, I just totally adored. But when I finally started getting into the through college and into the industry, you know, the people who were most influential for me in my time period were not like Bill Gates or Steve Jobs, because I was kind of on the tail end of that, and it was, and I got into the industry before the whole, you know, Zuckerberg, Facebook, and the new Tesla Motors. But so in my kind of pocket time frame, my people were like the which the name is escaping me, the guy who created Napster, and Justin Frankel. He was the guy that created Winamp and a few other related applications. These were like the very influential people when I started get my career. So what, now I'm curious, kind of turn that around. What were some of those kind of influential people for you?
I think it just depends on the exposure that you have. So growing up, I read stories about Bill Gates and how he sort of created Microsoft and how he worked on, you know, he's a programmer. He's a pretty good programmer, but he has a business mind, and he sold DOS, right, to IBM at the time that he didn't even have it. And so, and then he somehow managed to make it work. And so I took inspiration from that, because I always had this entrepreneurial ideas about, you know, with me. I wanted to do something on my own. And the idea of taking a challenge and then figuring it out and then getting it done and then building a business around that, that sounds very attractive to me, because that's kind of those are the types of people that we used to hear about. Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs. Obviously, Steve Jobs was not a programmer, but they built a great company, and Microsoft built a great company. Those are the two companies that were pitted against each other, and that's kind of what was in the back of my mind. I always wanted to be a really good programmer. I always thought that I want to be the world's best programmer. Then I realized when I grew up and when I got into college that there's no such thing as the world's best programmer. but I was ambitious. And I think ambition is very important if you want to go forward and achieve things.
You know, actually, that reminds me, probably the most interesting thing I gained in college was there were some people that were really good at programming, for example, just writing beautiful code. But then there some people didn't have the intuition, though, to just sit there and think for 20 minutes and come up with a solution with that code. So I remember for me, I'm like always making syntax errors, but I was able to eventually get a lot of all the assignments done. And, cause I could actually, figure those problems out. So everybody has their strength, when it comes into that. Probably the most memorable was when I took a symbolic programming language course, and our final was to figure out. Well, the problem was it was near Christmas, before the holidays, and the teacher gave us the problem where all the reindeer needed to be on Santa's sleigh, but certain reindeer didn't like being in front of or next to other reindeer. It's a perfect symbolic programming language problem, but I didn't quite get it all figured out within a time period, but some people did and other people didn't. But the thing I learned from that was that everybody's got different strengths that goes in the field. And what you need to do is make sure you're using those strengths to your best of your ability.
Yeah. And I think that finally we come to the same conclusion every time: follow your passion. If you're passionate about something, you should follow it, because if you are passionate, you are probably going to put in the effort to find success, because success comes with effort, not just with passion, but passion gives you the drive that you need to get through it, right? And it could be programming, it could be software development, it could be something else. So, do you listen to podcasts?
Oh, yes. Yep, but probably not enough.
Do you do that to learn, or is it because that's part of your job?
Actually, I can give you a quick history. So before I got into this, I was one of those nerds who was taking shows that were being streamed on the internet and converting them to MP3s so I could put them on my MP3 player and listen to them in the car. So when podcasting came around, I'm like, oh, this is going to save me a lot of time. I just wish these radio shows did this that I was listening to at the time. So I mainly do it to consume content that I really like. So it basically encompasses either things related to the cars industry. So I love cars. I'm a big car nut. So the podcasts I listen to are like Car Talk, obviously. And then there's some stuff that like Eastwood makes paint and body type materials and supplies. They have a podcast and some other automotive stuff. And then I also listen to development and podcasting related podcasts. Probably the most popular one I'm listening to right now is called Developers Tea.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of shows out there, and I just wish I had more time to be able to consume more of it.
So essentially, that's all you do all day long, right?
Listen to podcasts. Yeah, I wish. No, and actually, so lately, last year, my commute changed to where it's only 5 minutes. So I don't even listen to podcasts now in the car. But road trips, things like that, I usually do. And that's usually, if my wife's also in the car, a compromise. So then we end up listening to development because she does not like listening to car stuff.
Well, that's good. And she's still happy with you, right?
Oh, well, yeah, I'm married a developer, so.
Oh, she is. Okay, well, that's better. Because I was thinking that if I did that to my wife, I will be in big trouble.
Yeah. Now, she's primarily a C# .NET developer, but there's a lot of overlap. It's not like we don't get along or anything like that.
Yep, C# and PHP, they have a very lovely relationship.
Yeah.
All right, so you don't get a chance to watch a lot of screencasts, I'm assuming, because you're busy, or do you still do that?
I don't listen or watch screencasts in a subscribed way, but I do on a per-need basis. Does that make sense? So, for example, I'll watch some stuff on new Amazon features that come out for Amazon Web Services, or I'll watch a video that explains how to do XYZ in PHP or on a WordPress site, but I don't actually do it on a subscribed basis, just on a when I need it basis.
Yeah, that's probably what a lot of people do. Okay, so now we're coming to the end of this interview, but I want to ask you a few questions, quick answers, but I think this is probably the most important part of the interview. What's your best advice for people looking to hire new developers? So we're talking about managers, talking about maybe owners for startup companies, or you know, CTOs, they're looking to hire developers, and now they need to see, okay, which one, you know, what's my criteria? So what do you say to them?
So like to the HR department that's going to do the interviewing?
HR department, some companies don't have HR departments, so whoever's doing the hiring.
Yeah, so if hiring and interviewing, one of the things I like to find out is if the person that you're going to interview has actually taken any initiatives and worked on things on their own. If they're doing anything open source outside of school or work, for me, that's a plus. That tells me that they're passionate about their career and also that they're, you know, able to solve problems without having and create things without having a team there, which means they can be work independently.
And what's your advice for people looking to get hired and maybe their first job?
Well, hopefully you get a hint on that first one. Also, don't limit yourself to any particular thing. recently we were interviewing some folks, and I recall one developer saying he would never like to develop in something. So that's definitely not a good attitude to have. Be open to anything. Don't pigeonhole yourself into I only do this, because the industry changes, and I'll guarantee that you'll have to change with it.
Okay, so I want to talk about the work that you do. You are obviously passionate about it. Tell me a little bit about your company, what it, the services it provides, and why should we care?
Right. So we provide pretty much the gamut of everything that you would need for podcasting, from the hosting of the media files, the publishing and tools to easily publish those, integration into WordPress. So you can do everything from your own WordPress site, and subscribe and player tools as well. I'm probably just scratching the surface, but there's also podcast download measurement and play measurement. And we also help help podcasters monetize from their content.
So the bottom line is, if you're out there and you're listening to this show right now and you're thinking about starting a podcast, Angelo is a great person to talk to, because he's going to help you. He's helped me, and without his help, I wouldn't be able to produce this show. So I'm really grateful to you, Angelo. And I think that it's coming to the end of the show. I'm so excited I was finally able to get you here. Now, how can anybody get in touch with you if they wanted to?
Probably the easiest way is my personal site, which is just angelo.mandato.com. And I think I have contact information over there too, if you wanted to email me. You should be able to find it there.
All right, Angelo, it was great meeting you, and hopefully we'll see you again soon.
Great, and thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed the show. You can read the highlights and show notes with links on mentoringdevelopers.com/episode and the number of the episode. For example, mentoringdevelopers.com/episode 10 or /episode 25, and so on. Let me know what you think about this episode. If you'd like to ask a question, or if you have a comment, you can email me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. Oh, and one more thing. I really want you to be part of the show, even if you are a little shy. So go ahead and type mentoringdevelopers.com/join in your web browser. This will open a Google form where you can tell me what topics interest you and what dates and times you're available for about an hour or so. Everyone is welcome, and I would be thrilled to get a chance to talk to you. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you at mentoringdevelopers.com/join.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.